The most common way of designing a sermon is the ancient classical form of introduction, body, and conclusion, with a deductive propositional format. Some sermons are propositional truth presented in a deductive manner. Others are truth presented in an inductive manner. H. Grady Davis says that a sermon can be treated as a subject discussed, a thesis supported, a message illuminated, a question propounded, and a story told. There are probably a lot of other ways that sermons could be treated and structured. In preaching to a multimedia generation, I found the following map or design for a sermon very helpful in getting the message of a scripture unit into the hearts and minds of the listeners. I begin praying weeks before I prepare and preach the sermon. I often preach through books of the Bible, and so I know how to pray long before I begin the preparation. I begin a particular sermon because I have studied both the scripture unit and the needs of the people. I start studying a scripture unit by doing everything that we've looked at on the research checklist. Now, on this checklist, some of these things can be done very quickly. Others take a long time. Scripture analysis takes much more time than some of the others. If you're simply choosing a translation, that can be done quickly. So these steps, most of them do not take long. The analysis of the scripture takes much longer. Next, I do everything on the developing the sermon checklist. And again, some of these can be done very quickly and others take a while to do. In our study today, we are at the item on the sermon checklist entitled Select the Design of the Sermon. And we're going to look at some sermon designs. The first design we're going to look at is a design that I have found extremely useful. One of the chief reasons I like this design is it helps relate the scripture unit naturally to the heart and the lives of the listeners. The design is not forced. It easily leads the leader, the listener, because it's logical. It also gives me freedom to deliver the message. And if you observe carefully, you will see that the moves seem to follow the way people think. These moves allow the sermon to be narrative, inductive, deductive, dramatic, plot. Just about any design or form that you can think of. And most of the best sermons that I've listened to follow a similar design, or at least they answer the questions expressed in the design. So I hope that you will find this useful. You will notice that I do not use the term move in exactly the same way as David Buttrick does in homiletic. He has excellent insight in much of what he says, and I encourage you to study his book. However, be careful not to buy everything he says, especially in the theological realm. When I eat chicken, I eat the meat and push the bones aside. And that is a good way to learn to do in reading. If you read only the people that you agree with you, you will not learn much. If you learn and read from people that you do not always agree with, you learn to push the bones aside and get the meat. The method I am presenting has five moves or questions that can be asked of any sermon. These moves compose an oral communication stream or flow toward this response sought in the original purpose. And the moves are: hold the attention or create interest. Dash, wave the flag. Expose some aspect of sin. Dash, hook a nerve. Next, present God's solution. Dash, show the hook remover. Next move. Illustrating God's solution. Dash. Show the pictures. Next move. Challenge to respond to God's solution. Dash. Blow the bugle. So I always look for the flag, the hook remover, the pictures, and the bugle. I believe that we can follow these moves in a general manner in preparing almost any form of a sermon. However, let's suppose we're going to use the more traditional sermon form, and the moves would be as follows. Move one. The main purpose of move one is to hold the audience's attention, or the interest, create interest in the listeners. It's like waving a flag and saying, look this way, listen. In this move, you want the people to say to themselves, this is interesting, I need to listen, this may be for me. God might speak to me. Some people still attend a worship service believing that God can speak to them. And either in this move or in the next move, I try to create suspense rather than reveal the outcome of the sermon. In a multimedia generation, the old adage, tell them what you're going to tell them, and tell them, and then tell them what you told them, doesn't work very well. When you tell them, it is often over. It's over for you. Now, during this move or the next move, I often try to create disequilibrium in the listeners. This holds attention and creates a desire to discover how equilibrium may be reestablished. We also want to build rapport, make a communication connection, and get in significant touch with the congregation and start a give and take communication with the congregation. Sometimes, especially if we're speaking to an audience we do not speak to on a regular basis, we want to identify with them or cause them to identify with us. And we do this at the beginning of the sermon. Identification was recognized by Edmund Burke as one of the most powerful means of persuasion. And as soon as possible, we want to direct the listener's attention toward the direction of the sermon, the setting, or the unifying theme of the sermon. Now, you can gain attention and create interest by several methods. And probably we already have the attention of the congregation when we began. In our introduction or the beginning of the sermon, we are trying to maintain or hold their attention, and we're trying to create enough interest so that we can keep their interest. There are several methods you can use, and here they are. Use a visual aid. Read the scripture. Tell a human interest story that will lead into the unifying theme. Refer to the subject or the occasion. Use a personal reference or greeting. Ask a rhetorical question. Make a startling statement. Use a quotation. Tell a humorous anecdote. Have someone sing a solo just before you speak that focuses on the theme of the sermon. Have someone in the congregation ask a question. And there are many creative ways that you can grab and hold the attention and the interest of the listeners. Move two. Because you now have the attention, you want to create the interest, and so you have move two. The main purpose of move two is to set the hook. The move exposes a specific sin or some aspect of the fallen human condition that is presented in the scripture unit. It shows where we need the grace of God. This is a need at the deepest level of the human personality. For example, the Bible from Genesis to Revelation presents major characters. The Bible doesn't present them as people from whom we can learn about various virtues of the Christian faith. That's a big mistake that's often made in preaching about characters. They are presented as people whom the grace of God touched. All are fallen people who need the grace of God. Now, this move shows some specific area where we need the grace of God. This move may present this scripture unit, or may show a need for a reaction from the listeners. This move usually presents a need for change. However, it may be used to present a need to preserve the status quo. One of the chief purposes of this move is to create disequilibrium in the listener. If we haven't created that in the first move, it is to show where we have usurped the place of God. Its purpose is to create dissatisfaction with the present internal or external condition of the listener. It may show how the listener falls short of God's standard. In this move, the preacher presents the fallen human condition. And in this step, the preacher shows the listener how they are personally in need. Move 3. The main purpose of Move 3 is to present God's grace or God's solution to the ambiguity, or to show how God meets the deepest spiritual need. Always present Jesus Christ as the answer to the problem. Show that their ultimate hope is in Him. And this is an excellent place to use the Scripture to reveal God's solution to this particular aspect of sin or the fallen condition. Move 4. The main purpose of this move is to make God's solution come alive for the listeners. In this move, you paint word pictures. You want the listener to see in his mind the results of responding positively to God's solution and or responding negatively to God's solution. An excellent way of handling this move is to contrast both responses by illustrations or examples. Show what will result if God's solution is followed, and show what will happen if God's solution is not followed. Move 5. The main purpose of the fifth move is to appeal for response or challenge the listeners to act upon God's solution. You may appeal for a response using several different methods, and here are a few of these methods. You just appeal for a response. You challenge the listeners to act. You present a summary. You use a quotation. You use an illustration. You use your human interest story. You give an additional inducement, or you state a personal intention. Now take a sheet of paper and divide it into, and a ruler, and divide that sheet of paper into three columns. At the top of the left column, put the title in large letters, MOVE, M-O-V-E, underlined. At the top of the middle column, put the title, Function, and underline it. At the top of the right-hand column, put the title, Audience Response, and underline it. In the far left column, under the heading, Move, write in a column down the page the numbers 1 through 5 and leave spaces in between each one. Beside the number 1, And in the first column, under the word move, write setting the stage. In the middle column, under the heading function, and beside Roman numeral 1, write create interest and get attention. In the right column, under audience response, write, this is important, I want to listen. Now, this chart will give us the function and the desired response of each move. No matter what type of introduction you use, you want to gain attention, keep the attention, and create interest. If the preacher fails here, he will have trouble throughout the sermon. Now go back to the left column and continue your list. Beside Roman numeral 2, write, exposing an ambiguity. In the middle column, write, showing the ambiguity. Describing the need, revealing the human fallen condition. In the right-hand column, write, yes, I need a solution to this. In this step, we show why the listener should listen. He may present the scripture which shows the fallen human condition, or we may present a need that the listener has. Next, go to the left-hand column, and beside Roman numeral 3, write, God's solution. In the middle column, write, presenting the solution. And this is how we solve the problem. In the right column, write, this will solve this problem or meet this need. Now, in this move, we present God's solution to the ambiguity, the need, the problem, the aspect of sin, or the fallen condition. Now go to the left-hand column again, and beside the number 4, write, visualizing God's solution. In the middle column, write, visualizing the results. Here is what happens if I do it. Here is what happens if I don't do it. In the right column, write, I see this is for my life. Now go to the left-hand column, and beside number 5, write, challenge to respond. In the middle column, write, appeal to respond to God. And in the right-hand column, I will do as God asks. Now let's look at these moves related to the traditional division of a sermon: introduction, body, and conclusion. Take another sheet of paper and divide it into 3 columns. In the first column, write introduction and underline it. In the second column, write body and underline it. And in the third column, write conclusion and underline it. In the first column, under introduction, write move 1. In the second column, under body, write moves 2 and 3. In the third column, under conclusion, write moves 4 and 5. So that shows you how you take the old traditional body, introduction, body, and conclusion, and how these moves fit into that format. It's important to remember that these moves are not of equal length, and the order of the moves may also change somewhat as the general and specific purposes of the sermon changes. Each sermon will demand variations. Sometimes moves are left out depending upon the need of the sermon, but this gives a framework or a design where the sermon can flow. In other words, it creates the banks beside the sermon and lets it flow through. Now let's examine these moves in relation to the purpose to evangelize, to teach, to persuade, and to to incite to action, or a combination of the responses. You can see that if the purpose is to evangelize, you're also trying to persuade and incite the listeners to action. So you will develop the moves to maintain attention and create interest, show the human condition, touch the mind and heart, present God's solution, create the desire to respond by painting the pictures in the mind, and then calling for action to respond. Another very interesting form for designing a sermon is the drama form, or as Eugene Lowry calls it, the narrative plot. Since much of the scripture is narrative, this is a very effective method, and it has many varieties, and you may have your own way to do it. Those who advocate this approach claim that it is new. It is not. 30 years ago, as a college student, I had a superb communication teacher who presented almost the same concept and information. Her husband had been an outstanding preacher who had died, and she had been extremely helpful to him in his understanding of communication. Now, in this form, the sermon is thought of as a drama with a plot. The form is excellent for many passages in the scripture because it fits the way narratives were originally told and written. Outlining in propositional fashion some of the Old Testament narratives and some of the parables of Jesus does them great injustice. In fact, it just about squeezes the life out of them. Whereas the drama form lets them come alive, and it puts them in the original form. It lets certain passages flow and move like the great drama of life, whereas a form which has just propositional points makes a sermon a lecture. A great deal of this, of course, has to do with the delivery and the mood of the preacher. A drama deals in feeling and emotion. A lecture presents cold facts. Some preachers can kill the greatest emotional realities of life with facts. Every drama has a plot. If you can think of your sermon as a drama, you immediately see that the scripture has a plot. Most of the Bible is drama. And much of Jesus' teachings was cast in the form of a drama. Now, Eugene Lowry proposes 5 basic sequential stages to the sermonic plot. They are upsetting the equilibrium, analyzing the discrepancy, disclosing the clue to the resolution, experiencing the gospel, and anticipating the consequences. The first step in this form is to upset the equilibrium by creating tension or ambiguity within the person listening. An example of this is telling a human interest story and leaving the conclusion hanging, waiting until later in the sermon to reveal the outcome. This grabs the attention of the listeners. I often attempt to create disequilibrium in the introduction, even of the traditional form of the sermon, as well as all the other forms. The reason I do this is because it tends to maintain and hold attention. It's just interesting to observe that all theories and models of personality are based on the equilibrium theory. Every person needs to be put back on balance when things are thrown off balance. For example, when a person is hungry, his equilibrium is off because he needs and he seeks food. As soon as his hunger is satisfied, the equilibrium is restored. Same thing happens in the psychological and mental area of people's lives. if we throw that off balance, they put stress there or tension or cause them to wonder what is going to happen, then there is the seeking for this balance to return. A second step shows a gap between what is and what can be. In this step, the preacher moves to an in-depth diagnosis. This increases the tension and keeps the equilibrium off balance. And you can easily see how the human condition can be analyzed in this step. The third step is the bridge from the problem to the solution. And in this step, the clue or missing link is disclosed. And the missing link makes the problem understandable. And once the missing link is supplied, the whole thing is seen in a different light. Now, this usually causes a reversal in the expected conclusion. Almost all of Jesus' parables have this principle in them. Americans are so often familiar with the parables and interpret them from American culture that the parables for American people have lost their shock and usually the truth that they're teaching. Those who heard them for the first time experienced the shock, surprise, and reversal of what we expect. Step four presents the gospel as the solution to the human problem. And step five is the setting of matters in place after experiencing the gospel. It's the answer to the question, what shall we do then? Experiencing the grace of God in any matter sets us free to be the people of God that we are intended to be. I think this is a good form, and you should examine it. I think it has some difficulties and also some very positive things. It's worth looking at. But don't be fooled. It is not easy. It's probably not even for beginners. Now, another form that has great merit is based on Hegel's dialectic, thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. And Samuel Proctor taught this method for years and used it almost exclusively in his superb sermon. Proctor outlines his method like this. One, subject. Two, text. Three, introduction. And in the introduction was the antithesis. Next was the transition, and that was the thesis. Next was the relevant question. And then next was a synthesis, and after that, one, two, three. Now, I would suggest that you get Samuel Proctor's book, The Certain Sound of the Trumpet, Crafting a Sermon of Authority. It's a little book. It doesn't take long to read. It is superb. In his method, Proctor begins by selecting a subject or a passage of Scripture. And from these, he works out a proposition for the sermon. Now, he and I don't exactly agree about a proposition. I think what he has is basically the central core in his proposition, the central core of the Scripture unit. But later, as he moves through the process, he does the same thing that I'm talking about in proposition. The sermon itself begins with an introduction which involves the congregation. The purpose of his introduction is to introduce the antithesis of the whole message. The antithesis prepares the listener for the proposition which becomes his thesis. Sometimes the thesis comes from the antithesis.